This is Isaka's Page 2 Podcast.
You're listening to an Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Key, Isaka's IT Professional Practices Lead. On today's episode, I'm speaking with Cindy Baxter, the director for What's the Risk? Cindy has joined me today to discuss her article titled IT Audit in Practice, Survival When You Are Small, Business Continuity and Resilience. Cindy, thanks for taking the time to chat with me today.
Kevin, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's get right into it. What are the biggest challenges for small and medium-sized companies when it comes to business continuity planning?
So I think the first challenge that small businesses face is really the challenge of time. When you're small, there are not really a lot of people, even medium-sized business. We all feel that crunch of time. And given the current working scenarios, people have reprioritized things a little differently. So making sure that time is allocated to do proper planning for disaster recovery, for business continuity in general, is really critical. The other thing that I think is a real challenge is around adequate personnel. When you have a business situation where you're fairly lean, and that cuts across, of course, all sizes of business, but certainly on the smaller business side, it can be very dramatic. It's tough to make sure that the critical disciplines are covered by employees or personnel, even vendors, that can manage the risks of something going wrong and react quickly enough so that things continue as they ought to without impacting clients, regulations, or other key factors.
Absolutely. So what are some continuity lessons that the pandemic has shined a light on over these past 18 months or so?
So continuity planning, I think, was one of those things, you know, it kind of likens back to school where everybody would line up and go out for the fire drill. And it was a chance to talk to your friends. And then you went back in and nobody really thought about it a lot. I think what has happened is the fact that this is real, that we've been living through a year and a half of a business continuity plan, if you will, all of us living and working remotely, is just a new flavor that tells us things do happen. And there really is a reason to spend a lot of time for continuity planning. So I feel that really has been the biggest lesson that people have learned. The other one is to just acknowledge that it's critical to think outside the box. And by that, I mean, a lot of what had gone on in companies I've worked for pre-pandemic, as opposed to post-pandemic, was, you know, an attitude of coming up with the right priorities, figure out what was going to be the recovery plan, and was it really going to work? And attitude comes into play quite a bit. Will people really do this? Oh, what will the fallout be? And what the pandemic taught a lot of businesses, and certainly was evidenced by the company and the companies I've worked with post-pandemic, is creativity was really a good idea. People did not expect productivity to be so high. And initially, I thought, well, maybe it's just unique to the company I was working for at the time. But as time has gone on, it was really evident that thinking outside of the norm and doing something different had been underrated. The brainstorming that's possible when people get together and are willing to explore and consider different options makes a company much more resilient. So those would be the two things.
Great. So what are some common oversights that are made that tend to threaten successful continuity planning?
So the first thing I would say is updating prioritization. I find that people jump to systems or they jump to applications because they're very focused on the end. And what oftentimes happens is, especially when we all live in compartments, and all the more so when we're working remotely, people forget that they're part of a whole. So when you're talking business continuity, it's really critical to keep in mind that priorities have to be considered at two levels. One, at the centralized level, where that broader discussion is really essential and reprioritization is natural. And then one at the departmental or process level, if you will. So the challenge becomes all businesses to make sure that priorities are updated and it's a centralized approach. That's the one thing I think that's often overlooked. Why? Because human nature says it's all about me. So all about me means that you're not always thinking about the other guy that you might rely upon. And we all know reliance is a critical factor. Another factor is just updating crisis team and notification systems. I liken it to doing your holiday cards or holiday emails. Everybody always does a lot of updating, I would say, when there's a major holiday, and lo and behold, 20% of your contacts, if you're lucky, are outdated or non-existent. And it's the runaround of saying, geez, I really ought to send something to so-and-so, but you don't have the information. That's maybe not so great on the social scale, and you can overcome it. But on a business scale, it can be devastating. You really don't want to find at the moment of impact that you don't have a crisis team leader, or that you can't get a hold of a key application developer because nobody updated a phone number since she moved. So that tends to be the second item that people put on the side and forget that it really needs to be part of a routine and updated very frequently.
Great. So your article on this topic provided an example from the Brooks Group. What is your major takeaway from their experience?
My major takeaway, it's one of those things that I should have expected, I suppose. Small business owners, no matter what business I work with, are very passionate. And as we all know, that's what really carves success out for entrepreneurs. And I've seen it in the nonprofit world as well as the for-profit world. People who have started a business really know what they're doing and they know how to do everything. And in order for you to get entry into what they're doing so that you're really useful, you've really got to spend a lot of time and build up enough trust so that you get the inside scoop. When I started my interviewing with the Brooks Group's owner, I was sure, and I shouldn't have been, I was sure that I could just launch into, you know, how do you plan for continuity and what's the backups? This is a company that's been in business for almost 25 years. And the answer I got was, we're really okay. We don't need anything. And I said, well, you know, that's a quick interview. I think that was less than 60 seconds. But as we started to talk through how he runs the business, all these little things that I had no idea, and then he had no idea were considerations, came out. Because now he wasn't telling me about business continuity or what am I going to do for this disaster? Or what if I can't recover? He was telling me his story. And by virtue of telling me his story, I could interrupt, ask questions, seek understanding. And even in the course of what turned out to be an hour and a half or 2 hours for that first interview, it built a trust that really wasn't there. Had I not done that, I would have been done in a minute.
So what do you mean when you reference a sweet spot for an integrated audit approach?
I am a real fan of integrated audits. Throughout my career, I've heard from both the business side and the IT side how things tend to get lost in translation. I've attended ISACA conferences where somebody has joked that you can tell the CIO in the room because that's the person staring at his feet, they or her feet. They're not speaking up. And the reality is that as much as we focus in IT on making sure people understand our side of the story, I truly believe that audit, risk assurance, ISACA professionals are the opportunity to bring those groups together. And on top of that, there is nothing more integrated than business continuity when done correctly. As you look at a business continuity scope, what it really involves is not just the applications and the systems, which are absolutely critical. It not only involves, are there critical activities that have been outsourced or are there critical vendors, especially in a small business? If a small business relies on somebody, is there a connection? What are the systems? But it's much more than that. It really is about what we, quite frankly, saw in the pandemic, where we see in a real fire. And that's all about people. How are people prepared to do certain things? What is there even a crisis team? How do you make sure that you have skill sets that make sense, not just for, you know, recovery of a critical application on say a backup server and then flipping it back to where it belongs, but somebody who knows how to do CPR because you just don't know. All of that is involved. I've been in situations where key application providers, in fact, the lead or only developer left. And by virtue of leaving until the disaster took place, it was kind of like driving the car. Everybody thought everything was fine. So ultimately, an integrated approach is logical to most people when it comes to business continuity. It seems obvious that I might need to move my people out of a facility. It seems normal to have something like Send Word Now notify me based on how important I might be either to evacuation or restoration. So that's, I feel, the sweet spot for professionals like us to come in, all sizes of business, and bring teams together, business side, IT side, and really start a conversation, especially given our circumstances in the pandemic, where everybody is fully participating and we can have a very healthy discussion that broadens the scope to where it ought to be.
Great point. So what do you consider to be the most critical pre-scope questions that need to be addressed?
So I think, and actually it's funny, I wrote down, it depends. And it's actually true. Every time I go either into a risk assurance evaluation and assessment, or if I'm performing an audit, it really depends on what I'm facing. I think the critical factor for a professional is to keep all your skills in mind and remember that you're really investigating what's going on. So it's very important to not have preconceived ideas. I think a lot of times you go in, you can see what the company cannot see. It's a natural. First of all, ISACA professionals are trained to investigate. That doesn't mean the audience is trained to listen. So you have to get under the covers, understand things from their perspective, only by listening and asking those correct questions. Then that will surface some of the issues that then develop into questions. As an example, with the Brooks Group, I had a good background after some of the initial discussions that they seemed like a small group with a global environment. And I figured it was the supply chain that must be a big deal. And when I finally got to the point where we were talking, you know, what really bothers me, the business owner said, it was actually about materials control, which totally took me by surprise. I had to step into the business, which was really about manufacturing specialized glass containers, really high-end stuff, to understand that because that had been relinquished to partners, vendor partners, that was the kiss of death for the business. It wasn't the supply chain I was thinking about. It was listening to what the business owner told me and how a single bubble could cause a problem. And how does he set up either the right system or the white manual touch or perhaps an audit to make sure the quality control he needed kept costs in line and kept clients happy with the end result? So again, I think it is depends and use your investigation skills.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that before. So how does scenario planning fit into the equation?
I love scenario planning. I think especially as you go through and you consider it part of a process where you're really looking at risk prioritization first, then you're doing some interviews, a lot of investigation, maybe you go through your process flow, you're kind of loosening up your audience, right? It's a good opportunity for them to start to feel like you understand. By the time you get to the scenario planning, you should have made sure that you're focusing on the correct priorities for the business and that there's agreement there. You should be in a position to know the basics on the process flow, and you should have had a chance to walk through to find any potential gaps. That way, when you get to the scenario planning with the team, you can question, you know, professionally question, are the right players involved? Can we do some what-if scenarios? What's comfortable for people? You can facilitate language barriers. And by that, I mean IT versus business, because we know they're very common. And when you do all of that, I think it gives people a few things that are really critical. First of all, as mentioned earlier, people start to get creative. What if we try this? What if we send everybody home? 100% of our people home to work remotely instead of 50%. We don't know what to do in this pandemic, but we better be safe. We're going to send them all home and we're just going to have to worry that they're not going to be productive. Surprise, they are. Okay. So there has to be that participation and a willingness to try something reasonable. It also provides a good reality check for people. I think when you start to put plans down and priorities on a piece of paper, it doesn't allow that natural dress rehearsal for something that could happen. And dress rehearsals are wonderful because especially a team that now is kind of used to what you're trying to do understands the role they may want to play. They may really warm up to it. And now you've got people saying, wait, take two. What happens if that occurs? That doesn't sound like it's going to work at all. And people don't get defensive. They sit back and they say, huh, now they're watching it and they get it. Not just, you know, the tabletop exercises, because I view that as different. I'm talking true scenario planning where people put themselves almost into, you know, a stage production as if the disaster were recurring. Finally, I think the value of scenario planning is it gets people organized. It's not just the booklet you read on business continuity for the company. It's something that you can feel you took part in it and you get the logic of the steps, whether you're on the business side or the system side. Just as important, you know when to defer, because it's a natural that everybody wants to be the leader when there's a disaster. Or there may be several people who really want to run away, but they really can't. So not everybody can be chiefs, and not everybody can be, you know, the cooks in the back room. And having that play out in a scenario plan allows you to be much more organized when something really does impact the business.
It's extremely important. So can you elaborate a bit on the importance of findings focusing on achievable opportunities?
Yeah, this is a big thing for me. And I've seen this a lot. I think we've all probably experienced it ourselves. It's really when you complete an audit or, a risk assurance test, and you come up with results that you know are absolutely thoroughly investigated. You've got all your evidence and you've got your list of findings, and you approach the business owner and they're defensive. They don't agree with anything you've got. Somewhere along the way, something fell apart. What's really critical in my view about findings is setting expectations early on. It's something that we all think about and we oftentimes do, but I think it's commonly forgotten about the behavioral impact at the end of the line when you have to actually communicate those findings. It's hard for anybody, including auditors, right, to not be defensive. Let's face it, we're all used to being checked. So there's always somebody rechecking my work. I know they're looking over my shoulder. Their job is to find mistakes. So maybe I'm a little more used to it. But that doesn't mean I sit back and say, okay, I'll do whatever you say. No, we don't. We're all professionals. We say, no, you didn't understand. You didn't get that right. The value of an audit, in my view, or a risk assessment is adoption. So if I've planned expectations on what is going to happen, if I've listened carefully and investigated, so I've uncovered that really it's quality on a vendor's shop floor, not a supply chain, and I then ask questions, even though I might be a little shy about asking them, but I ask them sincerely, knowing that my end result should benefit my client, then by the time I get to those findings, there should be acceptance, or there should be an expectation between me and my audience that maybe we need to have a discussion. Maybe I did misunderstand things. What I try and keep in mind is that if I find something at an early stage of the work I'm performing for my client, if it's a walkthrough and I find a gap, if I'm doing a process flow and I find a gap, I don't need to wait to publish an issue. That's the time to have the discussion. I do believe the most effective, whether it's a risk assessment or it's a full audit or it's a test, I do believe the most successful ones are those that are a healthy conversation over the course of the work that's being done, so that when you get down to the formal finding, nobody's caught off guard. And it truly is a discussion to fine tune and ultimately work that the business will accept. When the business accepts the findings, that means they're willing to adopt. And once again, my view of the work we do is to make a business better, to grow them on the maturity scale. And if they're not believing the findings, or they're not interested in addressing the findings, or just as important, if I've misunderstood and I've given them stretch goals that are impossible to reach, then my finding doesn't have value because they can't adopt it. And adoption is critical to get to the next stage of maturity.
Cindy, you've provided great insight, but is there anything else on the topic that you'd like to make mention of?
I will do a quick ad for ISACA. So I was lucky enough to be the lead developer on the business continuity update that was done early this year. But for those people who are really interested in IT business continuity and disaster recovery, the audit program that ISACA provides is updated and available. And there were a lot of really valued and very, very smart folks that contributed to the work well worth the read to go into the details. It establishes the controls, tells you what you ought to test. It's a good footprint for communicating with your client.
That's awesome. So that's all the time we have for this segment. Cindy, it was great chatting with you. Thanks again for your time today.
Kevin, it was great chatting with you as well. Thank you for making time for me.
I am Kevin Key, and this is an ISACA podcast.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode of Page to Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode.